Welcome to the Veteran Chappice Radio Hour on Radio Free Nashville, 107.1 and 103.7, and streaming live at radiofreenashville.org.
Israel existed as a state. Palestine never existed as a state. Therefore, Israel has more legitimacy than Palestine. Have you ever heard that argument? There was never any ancient Palestine as a state existing. So therefore, in the creation of states, therefore, Israel has more legitimacy than Palestine. You hear this all the time from Zionists.
Yeah, that was Krishna Madan, historian, activist, retired teacher. And you will hear more from Krishna about historic and ancient claims to that land. But first, my name is Jim Wolgamuth, and I'm here with fellow Vietnam veteran Harvey Bennett. We're a member of Veterans for Peace. Veterans for Peace is an international organization of military veterans and allies whose collective efforts are to build a culture of peace, humanity, equality, and justice. Just go to veteransforpeace.org. The Veterans for Peace Radio Hour and Radio Free Nashville are supported in part by you, the listener, because it is you that keeps Radio Free Nashville going. And as a result, this radio show is then picked up by the Pacifica Radio Network, and so that we are heard across the country. So if you think this work is important, if Radio Free Nashville is important, click on the donate button and keep Harvey and I on the air in every time zone in the U.S. And if you support the work of Veterans for Peace, go to our site, veteransforpeace.org. So today we're bringing back Krishna Madan, who just recently gave a presentation for Veterans for Peace on who has actually lived in the area at the eastern end of the Mediterranean. In other words, that area that is right now under siege by Israel. So Krishna, welcome back. We want to listen to parts of your presentation and also dive deeper into the history of this land. But I want to let everyone know first that you can find the full presentation that you did for Veterans for Peace that traces the history of this troubled piece of land for more than 12,000 years. And you can find that on YouTube, and all you have to do is search Krishna Madan, KRISHNAMADAN, and it will come right up. So, for the full presentation, go to YouTube. So, Krishna, how do you want to start?
There's this one myth that Israel existed as a state, Palestine never existed as a state, therefore Israel has more legitimacy than Palestine. Have you ever heard that argument? There was never any ancient Palestine as a state existing. So therefore, in the creation of states, therefore, Israel has more legitimacy than Palestine. You hear this all the time from Zionists.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what they're bringing then is a concept from European war making, how to resettle borders in Europe from the 1800s.
Right.
Or Russia loses, so you create Poland, because Poland had existed before. This was the principle for Europeans settling their wars, but it was not a principle of decolonization. In decolonization, in which European empires were giving up their empires after World War II, the principle was not about looking to see what ancient state existed and then creating that when you decolonize. The whole idea of decolonization was to give independence to the borders that the Europeans created. That's one legitimacy for Palestine. And the second one is Palestine had its borders set after World War I under the League of Nations, and it was set to be prepared for independence. So those are two things, modern things, that are applicable to Palestine.
So there's the modern justification, but Israel constantly looks way back into history. So I want to turn to your presentation where you concentrate on ancient history.
So let me start then with the early ancient period, history of Palestine. And we're going back then to 12,000 BC. Just because the name Palestine is not used at that time doesn't mean that the people do not have a history. The idea of a country called Mexico is from the Spanish times, but the people there existed before Spanish times. So one of the Zionist things they say, oh, well, you know, Israel predates Palestine, maybe as a state, but not as an idea of the people having been there. So that's a distinction that we need to make when we talk to Zionists or look at Zionist arguments. So from about 12,000 BC, Palestine is part of what you call the Fertile Crescent. If you have the Mediterranean Sea over here, you have Palestine, and then it goes up through Syria to Iraq, the Euphrates, and the Tigris rivers. That's part of what we call the Fertile Crescent. I think everybody's heard of that. So we're talking about one of the oldest centers of civilization in the entire world, the Fertile Crescent. It's historically known as Canaan. In the Bible, it's called Canaan. Might be pronounced Canaan in Hebrew. Jericho is one of the oldest cities in the world. It's the oldest walled city and one of the oldest cities in the world. So you were looking at very ancient people that have been there since human settlement, since humans started settling down from being hunting gatherers and started doing agriculture. And in the Fertile Crescent and in Jericho specifically, where you had one of the earliest cities. So they've done the testing on the genes of the ancient Canaanites and what they found. And they found that the people that most closely are related to the ancient Canaanites, those people from 12,000 years ago, are the Palestinians and the Lebanese. Because those two countries, they're on the Mediterranean, on the Eastern Mediterranean, the people are descended, like 70% of the genes are the genes of the ancient Canaanites. So the Palestinians have those genes, and so they may not have been called Palestinians back then, but whatever they were called, it's basically the same people. So we have a period from about 12,000 BC to about 1300 BC when the Israelites start appearing, 10,000 years where there's people living there whose descendants are today are Palestinians and Lebanese that predate any appearance of Israelites. So this, when they say it's the Jewish home, well, yeah, it was the Jewish home for a certain period of time, but a very small fraction of the history of that area. Again, first appearance of the Israelites is only about 1300 BC, and you have 10,000 years of history before that, before Israelites even start appearing. During the time of the Canaanites, Gaza was a trading center in the Mediterranean. Then you have the Israelite conquest about 1300 BC. Now, who were the Israelites? The Bible stories are basically myths that really aren't accurate. They were stories that were made up by the Israelite tribes to justify the conquest. What historians have figured out and deduced is that the Israelite tribes were actually local Canaanites who wanted to justify conquering the rest of Canaan. And what's a great justification for war? Religion. So the idea of that we have the one true God, we have to conquer those that don't follow this one true God, those who worship Baal, for example. Heard of Baal in the Bible, one of the gods of the Canaanites. So this was a justification. So the whole stories of Abraham and Egypt and Exodus and Moses, there's absolutely no evidence of those events or those people. Those are all religious mythological figures where stories developed to justify the conquest of the promised land that, quote, was once ours before, when the Israelites were really just local Canaanite tribes that decided to expand and conquer as much of Canaan as they could. Almost at about the same time, you have a coastal people coming in from the Mediterranean, from Crete, and they're related to the Greeks, and these were called the Philistines. And we see them appearing at about 1200 BC. They're part of what we call the sea peoples, related to the Greeks. And they settled in coastal kingdoms along the coast of Canaan, like in Gaza, again, for example. That became a very famous city in the Philistine culture. Now, that area then began to be called Philistia. The Greeks called it Philistia. These people were in contact with the Greeks. They traded with the Greeks. The Greeks called it Philistia. And they just didn't call what the where the Philistines were Philistia. They called the whole area Philistia, just as the Romans called the coast of Africa. You know, the Romans developed the word Africa. They called the coast Africa, but they didn't know anything about the interior. They didn't know it existed, right? And then the interior got the whole name Africa from the Roman name for the coast. Well, same thing. The Greeks called the whole area Philistia, even the areas that the Philistines didn't actually rule. This word, Greek word Philistia, became the Latin word Palestine. So again, when Zionists say Palestine did not exist, you know, before the Romans called it Palestine in like about 100 AD, they ignore the fact that preceding name for Palestine was Philistia. That was how that area on the coast, the Philistine cultures were called. And that's how the whole area was called by the Greeks. It was called Philistia, which means Palestine. Just another word for, Mexicans say Mexico, we say Mexico. So it's the same deal, Philistia, Palestine, right? Different languages have different way of referring. Germans say Deutschland, we say Germany. Just because the Germans don't use the word Germany doesn't mean that Germany didn't exist, right? Basically, that's the Zionist argument when they say Palestine didn't exist because the word Palestine was not used. All right, so that brings us then to the Israelite era. And just the name of that term shows a Western bias. Because Western culture is derived from the Jewish heritage, this era is called the Israelite era. But there was never full Israelite control of that area. I really want to stress that. The Israelites that expanded from one part of Canaan, tried to conquer the rest, never fully controlled the whole area. They were always in competition with the Philistines, Philistia, and they were always in competition with the other Canaanites who resisted both the Philistines and resisted the conquering Israelites that were trying to take over the whole thing. So this is another thing. When they say this was once Jewish homeland, well, you never had full control. There was other areas. Part of that disputed era of disputed control, you had the Israelites versus other Canaanites from about 1300 BC, when you have the Israelites first appearing, trying to conquer Jericho and the other Canaanites, the people that worship Baal, the Amalekites, and so on. Then you have the Philistines appearing soon after, Israelites versus Philistines versus other Canaanites, three-way struggle for control. By the time all the Canaanites get subdued, you still have the Israelites versus Philistines from about 900 BC on. So important point, there was never that full control. Now let's get to terminology, Israelites versus Jews. In the West, and part of this is Israeli propaganda, they talk about, say, and this is just a myth, you know, Moses leading the Jews out of Egypt. Well, even if that had happened, it wouldn't have been the Jews. It would have been the Israelites, because the Jews are only one of the 12 Israelite tribes. You've heard of the 12 tribes of Israel. So in the north, you have Israel, and in the south, you have Judea. The Jews never lived in ancient Israel. You can go back and look at a map and look at what the homeland of the Jews was called. It was not Israel, it was Judea, which was to the south. Now, according to the Bible, there was supposedly one united kingdom of Israel where all the tribes lived, but historians don't agree on that. There's no evidence that there really was one united kingdom, David, Solomon, and so on. There really is no evidence for any of that. And what is known is that you have two separate Israelite kingdoms, Israel in the north, the 10 tribes of Israel. No Jews there, except maybe a few who may have immigrated to trade or whatever. And in the south, around Jerusalem, you have the kingdom of Judea, which is the homeland of the Jews and the tribe of Benjamin. So again, ancient Jews do not come from Israel. They come from Judea. But what is done in the West is the term Jews is used to refer to all of the 12 tribes, which is totally inaccurate, to lend an aura of legitimacy to the Zionist desire to control the whole area, to the Zionist claim, well, we came from Israel. No, you didn't. You came from Judea. You're only one of the 12 tribes. So we're going to talk about what happened to the other tribes.
So that's the first segment. And the question I would have immediately was, if the Jews are only in Judea, who were the Israelites worshiping?
One God. So that was what unified the Israelite tribes. Yahweh. They're all monotheistic. And the purpose of the monotheism was to conquer the whole of Canaan, to say all these other folks are worshiping fake gods. We worship the one true God who gave us this promised land and wants us to spread the truth about the one true God. So yeah, they do agree on religion. What they're disagreeing about is political control. I mean, that's even clear from the Bible.
Yeah.
But even the Bible doesn't say that those other tribes were Jewish. So there really isn't any dispute about that. It's just a custom that it's like the Confederacy calling itself Americans if it were to survive, you know. They were Confederates. They didn't have a claim to the rest of the U.S. because they were a separate nation.
Right.
Yeah.
How did they do genetic testing on ancient?
Yeah, I know we did... When I was teaching sixth grade, I used this NPR study, I think, and they traced the they explained specifically how they used the genetics, the DNA, to track all of the peoples that migrated or ended up in all the different continents to show that we all came from Africa,
right.
Eventually, you know, or ultimately. I think the way they do that, all they have to do is find a ancient remnant, a bone, something from the folks back in Philistia, and
It would be Cana, in Cana.
And to help us out, what's the furthest southern part of Canaan?
The Egyptian border.
At the Egyptian
border. Where Egypt is physically, you know, you do have the geographical separation, Africa, and then you get, well, with the Sinai, and then you get Palestine there. So there's a geographical, if you look at the map.
About how far north did it go?
Canaan does include Lebanon today. So it would go up to, you know, the Mediterranean is kind of like an oval. So up to the end of the oval would be up to where the Canaanite Empire went. These are coastal people. So you get the Fertile Crescent, but then Canaan is only part of the Fertile Crescent. Tigris and Euphrates is called Mesopotamia.
Mm-hmm.
So when you take Mesopotamia and add in the land of the Canaanites, you get the Fertile Crescent.
So it's not a big, big, big area.
No, and civilizations back then weren't big either. Mm-mm. We're talking about early human settlements. China wasn't big back then. Neither was Indian civilization. Yes, the Canaanite civilization was a civilization of city-states.
I know I've read some biblical archaeology about history that in the Old Testament with the conquest of the tribes and the Canaanites and all that, but they say there is no archaeological evidence of any abrupt change in any of the culture or the pottery.
Exactly.
Or anything else.
Because they were local people.
Right.
Very, very good point, Harvey, because if they really were from, as the Bible says, from the outside and then came back from Egypt, you would have found that abrupt change in material culture. But it isn't, because there were just local people that expanded out. It's like if Iowa decides to conquer the whole Midwest. Well, they still have the same culture.
And they've never found anything in Egypt that establishes that the Hebrew people were ever in Egypt.
Exactly. Exactly.
Nothing
right.
Egyptian writing,
no records,
history, and not even any Hebrew inscriptions on anything.
If they
supposedly built the pyramids, you would think they'd be.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and as far as the pyramids, apart from not being built by Jewish slaves, it wasn't built by slave labor. It was basically draftees, just as we have the draft for the military. Yeah. Well, they had a draft for labor. So you were drafted, people from villages were drafted to serve, mm-hmm. to build the pyramids. And there was a certain amount of pride in that, just as for many people, there's pride in serving in the military.
Mm-hmm.
You're serving, you know, your government and the emperor, and they believe all the propaganda, just as we believe the propaganda now, eh?
What you're telling me is the Ten Commandments, the movie, Charlton Heston, the staff, not based on reality.
But see, that's where Zionism gets so much of its power, because Western religious culture and a lot of the other culture derives from that Jewish heritage. So that's such a powerful thing on Israel's side.
Yeah, and we have just been surrounded by these narratives. All our lives, even as children.
And so you see it, and it leaves something in your head that it's real. You know, so that's how things happened back in the day.
Well, speaking of back in the day, how about part two?
So where we left off then, about 900 BC, Canaan is divided with the Philistia on the coast. You know, you have the Mediterranean Sea, you have Philistia here. You have the northern 10 tribes, Israel up here, Philistia is here. Northern 10 tribes of Israel, no Jews, except maybe a few who might have migrated for religious or trading purposes. And then down here is Judea, which is the homeland of the Jews, all right? So you have three areas in Canaan, Philistia, and then Israel, a little bit to the north and a little bit inland from Philistia, and then Judea inland and to the south. So again, disputed control, right? And the Jews are living in Judea, not Israel. This is easy to look up. I said before that Philistia became known as Palestine. So what happens now is that as you progress later in history, past 900 BC towards 500 BC, you get to a period in history called the Age of Classical Empires. And technology has improved, communication has improved, learning has improved. So smaller empires began to expand. And we find this all over the world. We find China expanding. We find empires in India expanding, empires in Mesopotamia expanding, and in Egypt expanding. All right. We have all of those expanding. And this is going to affect Canaan. It's going to affect those three civilizations where we left off at 900 BC, because they're basically in the middle of three big continents. You have Africa here. You have Canaan here. All right. You have Asia here, and you have Europe here. And in the middle of those three is, you know, the Fertile Crescent, is Canaan, is Palestine, is Israel and Judea. So it's going to be affected by those expansion of empires. Canaan then will go under the control of Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome. 700 BC, Israel, the kingdom to the north, no Jews, gets conquered by Assyria. Assyria takes those 10 tribes of Israel and disperses them into surrounding areas. And the Bible talks about this. These 10 Israelite tribes get dispersed into the neighboring areas. So that means the neighboring areas are Lebanon, Jordan, all the areas of Canaan, Palestine, and Syria. So it means that the descendants of those people have more of the blood of the ancient Israelites than, say, some of the European Jews who went to claim Israel, you know, in the late 1800s. Those were the 10 tribes of Israel that got dispersed by the Assyrians at about 700 BC. And I'm rounding off figures, you know, just a specific number. I'm just making it hundreds, 700 BC. 100 BC now, you're left with Judea then, right? You're left with Judea. 100 BC, after rebellion, the Roman Empire disperses the Jews out of Judea, not out of Israel, out of Judea. And then the Romans combined Judea, Philistia, which they'd also conquered, and the old conquered Israel, which had already been conquered by the Assyrians, now by the Romans. The Romans combined that, centralized that, and named it what? After what the Greeks call the area, which is Philistia. But the Latin for Philistia is Palestine. Yeah. So the word Palestine existed before the word Palestine even existed. It existed as Philistia. It existed as Canaan. All right. So very important point that I'd like to make there. So the Romans called it Palestine, but again, didn't mean that Palestine didn't exist before. It existed as Philistia. The people existed as Canaanites. So that's an important technical point to raise with Zionists is, you know, if your ancestors really were ancient Jews, they're from Judea. They're not from ancient Israel.
Krishna, one thing I forgot to ask, and maybe earlier, maybe it is the perfect time. King David, is he an Israelite or is he in Judea?
Okay, so remember, the people of Judea are Israelites too, but they may not, they're two of the tribes of Israelites. So there's archaeological controversy about David and Solomon. Many Israeli historians, archaeologists, do not find that there was really a big David or Solomon empire. And there's questions about the reality or the validity of those biblical claims. The Bible claims that there was one united kingdom of Israel, which eventually split then into Israel and Judea. But that has not been established historically for certain. What is probably more likely is that these 12 tribes, you know, they're kind of spreading out and conquering Canaan. So then they eventually congeal into two kingdoms, Judea and Israel. Now, if David had existed, which some archaeologists claim, they claim that the findings show that there was an empire around the time of David and it was a united empire. But remember, that's a disputed claim. Then he would have been the king of all the Israelites because that would have been a united Israel. But there is no substantive documentation that there ever was United ever a United Kingdom of Israel. All we have evidence for is two separate kingdoms at odds with each other.
That he was such a powerful figure, and but they can't find any evidence of any of gigantic structures that correspond to his period, which was like 1000 BC, was when he was supposedly.
Right. That's the claim, is that you had this vast empire, and that has yet to be found. What some Israeli archaeologists say is that these guys were basically chieftains. You know, they were probably big chieftains trying to expand their domain rather than kings as such.
Well, you mentioned they were odds at each other, the Israelites and Judea.
Yes.
At odds with each other. So the Assyrians came in and conquered the Israelites. Would that then have made the folks of Judea happy?
Very good question. I guess we would need somebody more familiar with the Bible. My sense of from when I used to listen to Bible stories is that they said, yeah, that's what you get for your sins, which is what religious prophets say, right?
Yep.
It's the wrath of God on you and so on, right?
And so much of the historic books of the Old Testament were completely rewritten in 6th century BC, just to formulate a narrative that would make them a powerful, cohesive people.
And I'd like to share with you this sort of a disagreement discussion I had with an anti-Zionist Jewish woman in our Palestine solidarity group we have here in Florida. So her claim was that these Israelites then merged with the Jews, but there's no evidence because the Assyrians did not control Judea. They did not conquer that. So they took those tribes and dispersed them into the areas where they controlled. So it doesn't follow either biblical logic or the biblical account, nor the historical account. I don't think there's anything in the Bible that says there was this big influx of the other tribes into Judea. I don't think there's any claim of that. It's like, they got taken away into slavery, and but God saved us. We were saved by God, while those wayward people of the north got taken away. So yeah, I mean, if there had been some big influx of Israelites into Judea, meaning that the other 10 tribes emerged with the Jews, that would have been in the Bible. But I really don't think that there's any account of that.
Yeah.
And again, there's no historical archaeological evidence of anything to that effect.
Okay. Are we ready for part three, taken from Rome to the Ottomans?
Move from the control by Rome to the Ottoman Turks. So a long period of time. We're moving from 100 BC to 1917 AD. First thing to note, Palestine, which is now a Roman province, an area of formerly Canaan, which is now a Roman province, formerly called Philistia, is part of Roman Empire. It becomes fully Christian by about 400 AD. Why? Well, that's where the religion started. Jesus was a Jew from Judea that lived in an area that eventually became Palestine. So all of these Christian Zionists, they really don't realize that Christian Palestinians, and there is a site, 10% of Palestinians today are Christians. It used to be 15% in 1948. 10% of Palestinians are Christians, descended from the very people to whom Jesus preached. What are the Christian cities in Palestine? They're Bethlehem, they're Nazareth. Well, you know those from the Bible. You know the word Galilee from the Bible. All of that is Palestine. All of that is area now under Israeli control. So when these Christians, this is good to bring up with Christian Zionists, if you're supporting Israel over Palestinians, you are supporting the oppression of the people to whom Jesus preached. Palestinian Christians oppose Israel just as much as Palestinian Muslims or Palestinian atheists. You do have Palestinian atheists. This is not just a Muslim, this is not a religious issue, which is something I'd like to stress. It's a national issue. Palestinians recognize that. 90% of religious Palestinian Muslims recognize that it is not a religious issue, but a national issue. All right, so the area becomes Christian by about 400 AD. And again, this is the areas where Jesus traversed, and his people then became Christian. And they became Palestinian Christians. 600 AD then, the Arabs have spread out of Arabia and conquer Palestine. Now, this is misrepresented by Zionists as saying, oh, well, you know, they've only been there, the Palestinians have only been there since the Arab conquest. The Palestinians are Arabs. The Arabs conquered about 600 AD, so they've only been there since 600 AD. This is, again, playing with the facts. It's like Mexicans. Have Mexicans only been there since the Spanish conquered, or did Mexicans exist there before the Spanish conquest? We know that Mexicans existed before the Spanish conquest. It's just that Spain conquered, made the area Hispanic. They adopted Spanish religion, Catholicism. They adopted Spanish culture, Spanish religion, Spanish language, and so on. And they became Hispanic and became known as Mexico. But the people existed before. So what happened was Palestinians adopted Arab culture and they became Arab. It's not like the population got pushed out and then Arabs from Arabia took over. It became Arabized. So a very important point to make with Zionists is Palestinian Arabs are still the people who lived before. So most of your Palestinian Christians converted to Islam, but you still had a strong Christian presence, especially in the cities in the north, in Galilee, in Bethlehem, and in Nazareth. So very important to explain how that Arab conquest worked. It was more of the population adopting Arab culture and becoming Arab, not Arabs coming in and displacing the local culture. And so Palestine became part of the Arab Empire. That lasted until the Ottoman Turks. The Turks were like a nomadic people from Central Asia who adopted Islam. And then they conquered the Arab Empire. And so they took over Palestine about 1500 AD. The Ottoman Turks. Then in the late 1800s, they began to permit Zionist Jews to settle and to buy land in Palestine. In the 1890s, you began to get the emergence of Zionism. Zionism is the belief that there should be a Jewish homeland, and they had different choices, but they decided on Palestine eventually. The reason for wanting this homeland is understandable because of the persecution that Jews face in Europe, and the pogroms and the massacres and just wholesale discrimination. The main central person in original Zionist thinking is Theodor Herzl. But he was an atheist now. He was not a religious Jew. So Zionism did not start out as... So when people say this is a religious conflict, it's not. Palestinians do not oppose Israel for religious reasons. And the founder and the Jews who first went there were not religious Jews. They were very secular Jews. The founder of Zionism, Theodor Herzl, the theoretician, actually, he was an atheist. Here's what Herzl said about how this was going to be achieved. And this is his quote. Anti-Semites will be our greatest friends. And let me repeat that. Anti-Semites will be our greatest friends. Why? They're going to want us out of their country. They hate us. They're killing us. They're murdering us. Yeah, they're going to want us out of there. And this is true because which country in Europe is the strongest supporter of Israel? Deutschland über alles. Germany. The former Nazis are now supporting Israel to the hilt in the genocide that's happening. And it proves what Herzl said. And you can look up the quote. This quote can be looked up on the internet. And I may have the latter part wrong, but it might not be friends or, you know, it might be more words in it. But that's the idea. Anti-Semites will be our greatest friends. And it came to pass. The countries supporting the creation of Israel, supporting Israel, were the countries that tortured Jews, that had the pogroms and carried out the Holocaust and cooperated with the Holocaust. So Zionists then began to buy land through the Ottoman, because they were permitted to from the Ottoman Turks, to create farms where they began farming in Palestine. But there was a problem here because there was a different land concept in this. To understand the land concept that operated in traditional areas like the Ottoman Empire, we need to look, say, at European feudalism. We remember when the lord had the land and you had the serfs living on the land and the serfs worked. Remember learning that? The serfs worked for the lord. They had the right to live on the land. They could not leave. They had the right to live on the land and they had to give the lord a part of their produce in return. And the lord did not really own the land. The king is what really owned the land. The lord had the land at the, you know, at the behest, at the permission of the king. But in European feudalism, the lord could not kick the serf, the peasant, off the land. Anybody remember that concept? That's a capitalist idea. That came later with the development of European capitalism. On the feudalism of the traditional relationships, the serf was exploited, definitely. But he could not be kicked off the land. Well, that was the understanding in the Arab areas ruled by the Ottoman Empire. It was still that traditional feudal idea that, yeah, you have a big landowner. He owns the land, but the people have a right to live on the land. Very important. Now, what the Zionists do then, they bring in a different mentality, a modern European capitalist mentality. We bought the land. It is ours. These people living on it, they don't have a right to live there, which violated the traditional rules existent in Ottoman Arab society as practiced in Palestine at the time. It's like American Indians and you know, white settlers, right? You had a different idea of land ownership, right? So you began to get the same conflict between an Eastern and an older idea of land ownership versus a modern capitalist idea of land ownership. Zionists would buy the land, and then they would kick the native Palestinian farmers off the land, which obviously created a lot of problems, because people don't like being kicked off the land where their ancestors have lived, you know, for hundreds of years or more. So this can be called internal ethnic cleansing, where Palestinians from large areas where Zionists have created these Zionist farms, these kibbutzes and so on, have this slogan, and this is a slogan, Jewish labor for Jewish land. That was the slogan. We bought the land with our money. We're going to bring in our workers who are exploited and oppressed in Europe, which was true. We're going to bring in to free them so we can have Jewish labor for Jewish land, which, however, violated the previous understanding about how land ownership and the right to live on the land works, which existed in Palestine on the traditional arrangements, which also existed in feudal Europe, right?
We're talking about the commons, the disappearance.
Yeah, there's a whole idea of the commons. Yeah, exactly. It's the idea of the commons.
Got rid of those. Yes.
Exactly.
The key point here is, and this is something that's lost, this is not a religious dispute. This is a political dispute. But anybody who threatens Israel is seen as anti-Jewish. Not anti-Israel, they're seen as anti-Jewish.
And that's a manipulative use there. Even this land conflict we're talking about, in the books, this is described as intolerance to Jews. They couldn't tolerate Jews, so they just attacked them. But it's not. It's you're attacking the people who kicked you off your land. Like the American Indians attack whites because they dispossessed them from their land. They didn't have anything inherently anti-white about them. Whites were the ones that kicked them off the land, so they attacked them. It's the same principle at work.
So to go to it's probably a minor thing, but what's your thought? Were Jesus's 12 disciples Palestinian?
There's people that would say that, but that's technically not accurate, because at that time they would be Judeans. The Romans had not changed the name of the area. So basically, it was Judea. It was occupied Judea. They would have been Jews. They would have been Judeans. However, what I would say, the descendants of the disciples are Palestinians, which is an important point Christian Zionists ignore. The descendants of the disciples are Palestinians. Palestinians have a lot of Jewish blood in them, just by what we're talking about. You know, the Romans dispersed most of the Jews in Judea, but some remain. And some converted to Christianity. You know, so some Jews followed. Who were Jesus' followers? They were Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus' followers were all Jews.
Some of them relocated to other areas of Palestine. Didn't leave Palestine itself.
Yeah. So Palestinian Christians are descended from Jews who have followed Jesus. It's not like some alien Christian group came in. Palestinian Christians are descended from Jews who follow Jesus. A lot of Palestinian Muslims are descended from Jews who first changed over to Christianity and then changed over to Islam as the generations went through. So the answer to the question, the disciples were Judeans. They weren't Palestinians, but their descendants today are Palestinians.
Now, when you mentioned the Arabs conquering the area, was this before Islam?
No. Islam is what motivated the Arabs for the conquest. Remember, with the ancient Israelites, you use religion to conquer?
Yep.
So Islam was the motivation that united the Arab and gave them the impetus to conquer.
They were conquered by the Turks, the Ottoman Turks.
And then they were conquered by fellow Muslims who converted the Turks, yeah.
Okay, then the last thing I wrote down here, will anti-Semitism ensure that Israel survives?
That's a good question. I think the manipulation of the term anti-Semitism is what is enabling Israel to survive. The idea of calling opposition to a Jewish supremacist state to say that if you oppose Jewish supremacy over Palestinians, you're anti-Semitic, that is what is enabling Israel to survive. But the existence of Israel is creating a lot of anti-Semitism. You know, they're talking about anti-Semitism increasing. Well, yeah, if you have a state flying the Star of David, a Jewish symbol, doing it in the name of all Jews, and calling itself a Jewish state, well, obviously that's going to promote anti-Semitism.
All right. Well, we got one more, and this is important because this is talking about the mandate.
That was excellent. That really helped clarify things.
So Palestine, then, and other areas of the Middle East that the Allies took away from the Ottoman Empire were put under control of the League of Nations. The League of Nations was basically the precursor to the UN. It was like the UN, not a strong though. Of course, we can say the UN isn't strong because it's permitting a genocide to occur right now. Part of the whole idea of the League of Nations of Wilson is self-determination, freedom, and that sort of stuff, right? So it is in this context then that the Palestine mandate gets created. The context is often missing when Zionists would say, oh, but Palestine was British, like they had the right to give it away. No, that's not what a mandate was. So the League of Nations created mandates for the conquered Mideast areas under the control, given them to Britain and France, which were the two winners. You know, the winners get the stuff. Germany lost stuff. Ottoman Empire lost stuff. Austro-Hungarian became Austria after World War One. So they took away stuff from the losers. So Britain and France got parts of the Middle East. Now, a mandate is different than a colony. The French had Algeria as a colony. The French considered Algeria part of France. They owned it. By their law, they owned it. I'm talking about their law. They, in their eyes, they owned it. A mandate, in the eyes of the colonizer, in the eyes of the imperialist, is not owned. The person running the mandate, the European countries, Britain and France, acknowledge they do not own this country, that it is not a colony. Very important point. Look, what does the word mandate mean? When a politician wins the election, you say he has a mandate, right? If you get 66% of the vote, he has a mandate, right, to do this, blah, 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 blah. A mandate means that you have, like, you're given an authority. So the League of Nations gave Britain and France the mandate over Palestine, Jordan, Lebanon, and Syria. And what was the mandate? What did they have authority over those areas for? It's very important to know what that mandate was for. It was to prepare the inhabitants for independence. That was the sole purpose of the mandate, to prepare the inhabitants for independence. Now, it's a racist idea, but let's just take what they're saying they're supposed to do. That's what they were supposed to be doing, right? These brown people aren't ready for independence, so we'll prepare them for independence, right? But that was the only purpose of the mandate. That was the only reason for the mandate, was to prepare the inhabitants for independence. So it's not ownership. It's a mission. The mandate is a mission, and you have a specific role. It's not a colony. And as I said, there are four mandates. Palestine and Jordan was entrusted to Britain. Lebanon and Syria was entrusted to France. Three of those countries today are independent because the mandates were carried out. Three of those countries, Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon, eventually got their independence. One of those mandates did not receive independence as was required by the mandate, Palestine, because they allowed Zionist immigration and Zionist takeover, which really the mission of the mandate was subverted by the Zionist immigration into Palestine. So let's look at how they justify this, how they justify the immigration. During the course of World War One, you get what is called the Balfour Declaration. Balfour was a lord, a British lord in the British government during World War One, and he promised to Lord Rothschild that Palestine would be a home for the Jews. But in the same sentence where it says that this should be a home for the Jews, it also says no harm must come to the non-Jews, that the rights of the inhabitants presently there should not be infringed. It's very important when you look at the Balfour Declaration. Zionists will say, oh, well, the Balfour Declaration gave us Palestine. No, it did not. because it said a homeland. It doesn't say a state. It says a homeland, provided that no harm comes to the present inhabitants of the area. This is an impossible condition. Promise is invalid. If I lend you my car on the condition that you don't put any miles on it, what kind of promise is that? You can't drive the car, right? Well, this is the same thing. You promise a Jewish homeland, but you say no harm has come to the other inhabitants, which would be inevitable if you're going to have a massive migration coming in and you're going to get a competition for land and so on. So it was an impossible condition, making it invalid. So now Zionists will say, oh, well, they may, are people who are apologists for Israel. They say, well, they make competing promises to the Arabs and Jews. Yeah, but these promises are not equivalent. Yes, Britain did make competing promises, but one promise was to their people who lived there and one promise was to a people who didn't live there, right? So that's how you can view the competing promises argument that is made. So after the Balfour Declaration, you get an increase, a drastic increase in Jewish immigration, and you get the Palestinian displacement through what I just explained. The land is bought. You have local Arabs living there under the arrangement that whoever the landowner is, I get to live here. That's the traditional feudal farming living arrangement for rural areas. But then suddenly, this Europeans come in, and they bring in this capitalist mentality, and then they kick the native people off the land. They just would have no comprehension of that. You know, that whole idea that you could kick them off the land that is traditionally the family have lived on for, you know, hundreds of years, it's not just like with American Indians. It's totally alien. So what happened then is that the Palestinians who were expelled from these farms, from these kibbutzim, attacked the people who ran them, because they were displaced. The people who displaced them, the Palestinians, started attacking the farms, because they had been displaced from those areas. The Zionist immigrants then began to organize militias to defend the areas that they had taken, but also to prepare for further expansion. So you began to get Zionist terror. From 1924, you began to get the first Zionist terror groups. So the purpose of this was to intimidate the Arabs, the native Arabs, from resisting being expelled off the land, which these farms were doing, and to basically prepare a militia for future purposes, for further expansion, and for the idea of, you know, greater Zionist Jewish control over the area. Between the 1920s and the 1940s, thousands of Palestinians were killed by these terrorist attacks. If you look at Menachem Begin, who was a leader of the Irgun, he was on a British wanted poster for terrorism. Yitzhak Shamir, another Israeli prime minister, was also on a British wanted poster for terrorism. We're talking about killing civilians, British civilians, Arab civilians, and sometimes incidentally Jewish civilians also were killed by Zionist terror groups. So it wasn't the Palestinians, it wasn't the Gazans, it wasn't Hamas. Hamas would be three, four generations later. No, they didn't introduce terror. It was Zionists that introduced terror to the area to intimidate the Arabs and to suppress Arab resistance to expansion. Okay, so this situation of Zionist terror exposed to Palestinians leads the Palestinian Arabs to rebel. It's a civil rebellion. It's not a military rebellion. 1936 to 1939, you get what is called the Great Arab Revolt. It's just prior to World War II, eh? The Palestinians went on general strikes, trying to paralyze the economy, demonstrations to protest the increased immigration, to protest being kicked off the land, protest what the terrorist groups, the Zionist terror groups were doing. How did the British suppress this resistance by the Palestinian Arabs? They used the Zionist terror groups. They used British troops and they used the Zionist terror groups to suppress the Palestinians. So in the course of this resistance, this three-year resistance of the Palestinians to British rule and the British permitting Zionists to take over, 10% of adult Palestinians were either killed, wounded, exiled, or jailed. This suppression was so strong that it weakened the Palestinians, because then you would follow World War II would follow. No resistance would be allowed then. And then by the time World War II ended, the Palestinians were so weak because of this suppression by the British of the revolt, but the militias, the Zionist militias were still operating, that the Palestinians could not resist when the Zionists would take over starting in 1947.
Krishna, you know my question. If the British actually complied with their responsibility for the mandate, if they actually set free like the French did,
right?
If they did that, then we're not talking tonight.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. If they had reassessed the situation and said, they could have looked at the 20s and says, given that increased Jewish immigration is interfering with our duty in the mandate to prepare the inhabitants for independence, therefore we need to stop it, to revoke the Balfour Declaration, which is not a piece of law. It's just a governmental proclamation, but there was no law passed. Yeah, there would not have been a problem there. But the European Jews lived in Western Europe, in Britain. So the British had that influence there versus, say, worrying about the Arab subjects in the mandate. So it's who's more important.
And this is where the anti-Semitism kicks in. Let's make sure the Jews have a place to go to.
Right. Yes.
This was also, you mentioned in your talk, Lawrence of Arabia. The British had promised independence, and then they betrayed them in the mandate.
Of course, history is so fascinating, and it history gets a bad rap. You really get an idea what is going on, or what should be going on, or maybe what could be going on if we'd have paid attention to history all along the way. And right now, our mainstream media actually thinks that history started on October 7th.
Right.
Of 2020.
The other part that I think is interesting was the end of the mandate and then the UN partition and the resolution.
Part of the original.
And we can see that original. If you want to look at that original, once again, YouTube, Krishna Madan, KrishnaMadan, and you'll be able to find the whole presentation, which is fascinating.
I was looking at the letter that 500 creatives from Hollywood signed condemning the comments of
Glazer,
the director of Zone of Influence at the Oscars. Yeah. Did you see that by any chance, his talk?
I read an article about it. I didn't actually read the letter.
His comments were, to me, perfectly appropriate. He was
very mild. It was a very mild comment.
The purpose of the film was to demonstrate the horrendous impact of dehumanization.
And to show that people nearby can ignore atrocities.
Yeah. Right, because they're not people.
And basically, that was the situation on October 6th. It was all fun and games and rave rock concerts. And on the other side, you have an occupied people.
Who are out of sight, out of mind. It was becoming obvious to the people of Gaza, somewhat to the West Bank too, that they, any hope for them was off the table, because they were going to, have this Abraham Accords and all this crap, and they weren't going to have to worry about Palestine. And Netanyahu's bringing the new map of the Middle East to the UN, and there's no Gaza, there's no West Bank.
When Israel does River to the Sea, Israel can do River to the Sea in maps and in words, and there's no complaint.
So the open letter that all these people signed, and apparently it was 500 initially, now it's 1,000, but apparently they're finding out that a lot of these 1,000 names are made up, and they've got all these.
I smell the IDF.
Whatever, Israel has just spawned all these phony websites. But the wording of this letter, they condemn him for saying out of context that we refute our Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation. They just said, he refutes his Jewishness,
Yeah, right. They just end the sentence there,
Their big blowback thing was, how can you possibly, make a moral equivalency between what the Nazis did to us and exterminate us, and all we're doing is trying to protect ourselves from being exterminated by Hamas, who doesn't have an army, who doesn't have it.
Right.
They said, and they really took offense at the word occupation. They said, how can you use the word occupation to describe the indigenous Jewish people defending their homeland that dates back thousands of years and is recognized as a state by the UN? Well, the UN recognized a state for them and a state for Palestine, and it had borders. Where are those borders? And they had nothing but trash to say about the UN ever since they invaded.
Right, yes. They love what the UN did with the partition resolution. I think the next section I point out that the partition revolution wasn't just a recommendation to partition, but it had provisions that if that was not accepted, certain procedures should have been followed, which were not followed.
Right.
Israel then just unilaterally declared independence, which violated the provisions of the partition resolution.
And even the partition resolution guaranteed protection of the inhabitants of these both regions.
Well, we better leave it there. Well, I think we've got enough information there so that we can all counter any argument that Israel has a bigger claim historically to that land than the people that are currently called Palestinians. Once again, Krishna, this has been fascinating, enlightening. I hope a lot of people listen and make comment and look up the longer version on YouTube. And to find that complete version, all you have to do is go to YouTube and search Krishna Madan, KrishnaMadan. So with that, do you have a song that you'd like to recommend to finish it up?
Oh, that would be the theme for today. You know, there's an Irish song about Palestine, and it's really beautiful. And Palestine.
Mm.
And that shows the name.
And Palestine.
By the way, the Hebrew, ancient Hebrew name for Philistia, what they call the Philistines, was Palestine. So you can see the name there. You can see Palestine, Palestine. The Hebrews call the Philistines Palestine. So you can see Palestine there, you know, for the people that say Palestine didn't exist. So let's look up that Irish song called An Palestine.
And here's a group called Fabius.
Palestine.